Power Your Mind with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Adrian. Welcome to the 74th episode of Robots. In today's episode, we'll be looking into human-machine interaction, more specifically mind control. Our first guest, Raul Rojas, joins us for the second time on Robots and talks to Sabine about his group's latest experiments with using an emotive epoch EEG interface for giving high-level commands to their autonomous car called Made in Germany. In the second part of the show, I talk to Jeffrey McKellar, CTO of Emotive Systems, who gives us more technical details on the epoch interface and its potential for applications in areas as diverse as marketing, education, traffic safety, and, of course, robotics. But first, let's listen to the latest news in robotics from Amanda.
Due to the tragic events following the earthquake and ensuing tsunami in Japan, a number of expert roboticists have joined the grounds to help accelerate recovery. A radiation monitoring robot, dubbed MoniRobo, developed by the Japan's Nuclear Safety Technology Center, has been deployed to the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power station, while possibly the only robot being brought into play which had been specifically designed for use in a nuclear accident, it is far from the only robot to be deployed, or at least offered for deployment during the recovery phase of the current disaster in Japan. Rescue robots help relief efforts in the aftermath of the earthquakes and other disasters by navigating through wreckage that is too dangerous for people to enter and by gathering information on missing persons in the surrounding conditions. Small unmanned marine vehicles, both surface and ROVs, can be of assistance in inspecting bridges for underwater damage or debris posed to crash into the substructure and damage the bridge. Between the advanced state of robotics in Japan, the extent of damage, and the likelihood that the wreckage continues to conceal living persons, the current situation presents an unprecedented, pressing opportunity to put the whole range of rescue robots to the test. Ironically, as reported by the Center for Robot-Assisted Search and Rescue, the leading researchers from Japan in rescue robotics were in the U.S. for the CRASAR-organized GST responder exercise and workshop, although they returned to Japan immediately.
Thanks, Amanda. A few months ago, Raul Rojas was on our show to talk about the autonomous cars he's been making with the autonomous team at the Free University of Berlin. He told us about some pretty impressive iPad and iPhone interfaces at the time. In today's show, he tells us about a new type of interface, mind control. The video of a student controlling a car using brain signals hit the web a couple of weeks ago before going viral. He tells us about the limitations and promises of this proof-of-concept demonstrator.
Hi, Raul. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you for the interview.
We saw your latest video showing a mind-controlled autonomous car. Why is it interesting to mind-control a car?
Well, in this case, this is a classical technology push project. So there are projects in which people are demanding some kind of technology. There are projects in which you want to push the technology all the way out as far as you can go. So in this case, we wanted to see how far has technology come with brain-computer interfaces. And then controlling a car is actually hard to do using computers. We wanted to see if we could do it. Now, as to the feasibility of the project or future applications, I don't think that people are really looking forward to controlling cars with their brains. It would be easier just to tell the car where you want to go and the car does it. So our long-term goal is to have autonomous cars. But in the meantime, we are experimenting with all kinds of human-machine interfaces, all different types of control possibilities. And this was just so interesting that we couldn't let it go.
How does this brain-car interface work?
Well, using a brain-computer interface, you cannot distinguish too many possibilities. In our case, we can only classify four directions. That means that we can classify on the screen going to the left, going to the right, going up, and going down. We mapped those four directions to commands for the car. That means that whenever the person tells the computer, I want to go to the left, and we connected that to the steering wheel, and then the steering wheel advances by a small angle to the left. Or if you want the car to go to the right, then the steering wheel advances a small angle to the right. And up, in our case, means accelerating the car. Down means diminishing the velocity of the car, negative acceleration. And using this technique, just by using quantums of change in acceleration or steering, we get a smooth driving of the car. It would be very difficult to really steer a precise angle using a brain-computer interface because in our case, we were only using 16 sensors, and that doesn't give you too much resolution. But for our purposes, which was just a proof of concept that you can do it, it was enough to drive in an open space and be able to control the car.
So if you want to turn left a lot, does that mean you have to think about left for a long period of time?
Well, there are different possibilities. Usually the people who work on brain-computer interfaces, they have different strategies for test subjects. So some people, they think that they are moving, for example, the right arm, or they think that they are moving the left arm. Some other people think about words, just some combination of words or poetry, and that gives you a lateral signal, a lateralized signal on the brain, or they think about images. So everybody has a different strategy for producing a different pattern on the sensors. And there are even people who are not really able to operate using a brain-computer interface. This is a known fact in the psychology community. They even talk about brain literate and brain illiterate people because there are some people who do not really learn how to use a brain-computer interface, and nobody knows exactly why that is so. But in our case, for example, what we did is we tested different students, several students, until we found one who was able to train the system to use these four possibilities, these four directions. We think now that using more sensors, 64 sensors, we can increase the resolution. But even with the 64 sensors, the resolution is always small. And you have to have your own strategy for training the system, which means, as I told you before, that you can think about images or words, or you can think about body parts, but certainly you cannot just think about the word left or right, and then the system would recognize that. You have really to produce different patterns in the brain, and that means thinking two very different things for doing this categorization.
How difficult was it for the students to train the system?
Well, it takes around 10 to 15 minutes to train the system. If it's a person who is able to work with the brain-computer interface, there are people who tried for 1 or 2 hours, and they were not able to use the brain-computer interface. So it's different for different persons.
So like you just mentioned, there are people who are brain illiterate, and I wonder if I'm one of them because there's so many things happening in my brain at a single time. And so I'm wondering, for real-world applications, do you think there's a future for this? Won't there be too many misinterpreted commands?
The problem with brain-computer interfaces is that you have to concentrate a lot. So you have to be really thinking about producing these different patterns so that the computer can distinguish them. So that means that working with a brain-computer interface for 10 minutes is like working 1 hour. So you feel exhausted after having to be so concentrated. What we did in the case of the car to avoid having to concentrate too much is that we let the car drive in an autonomous way, and we only have decision points. So, for example, the corner is a decision point. So the car goes by itself, and only at the corner you can tell the car, I want to go to the left, I want to go to the right, using the brain-computer interface. And that means that you have only to concentrate for just a few seconds and give the command to the car. I think that some kind of combination between autonomous operation and brain commands could be useful in the future for controlling some kind of machines. But there are other possibilities, like speech recognition, for example. If you're able to give the command just by talking, it's the same as if you just thought about it. I think there is a future for brain-computer interfaces in the case of handicapped people, if they are not able to talk and give the command, or if maybe they are not able to move. And in that case, a brain-computer interface could be a window into the outside world, but it would have to be combined with some kind of automatic operation of the control systems so that it's not so exhausting for the people using the interface.
You did this as a proof of concept. Will you be pushing further in the direction of brain-computer interfaces?
Well, we are working now with a wheelchair, so we are interested in seeing how good can we control a wheelchair so that you can navigate, or the person sitting in the wheelchair can navigate in an apartment or can navigate in a building. So we are just doing that, and we want to show that in this year. In the case of cars, there is an interest in analyzing the mental state of the driver, just to understand why people, for example, fall asleep while they are driving, or what causes this attention when people, why do people do not see other cars or do not see red lights, what happens when they are following the street in an attentive manner, when they are not. And, of course, at the end, you don't want the driver to be using a cap, but you want to understand what's going on in the brain of the driver in order to use other systems, maybe external systems, video cameras looking at the driver, or some kind of sensors which can warn you if the driver is doing something dangerous. So in that case, as an application for extracting information about drivers, I think it's a useful tool.
I'm wondering if navigation for wheelchairs and cars are somewhat similar.
It's very similar because you have to turn to the left or right and you have to accelerate and brake. So the problem actually is very similar. What we want to do is diminish the training time so that you can train the system in just a few seconds, if possible, then make it safer so that even if the wrong command arrives from the cab to the control system knows that, for example, there is an obstacle, and using external sensors, it doesn't allow the wheelchair to go against that obstacle, and also make it a little more sensible. I mean, more sensitive in the case, so that you can have a fine tuning of the commands that you give to the computer which is driving the wheelchair.
We've seen iPhones, iPads, and now brain interfaces. What's the next step?
So we have been experimenting with everything. But what I would really like to have as the next step is speech recognition, so that our car, which is already driving autonomously in Berlin, is one in which you just step in and you start to talk with the car like which you would do with a taxi driver, and you tell the taxi driver, just take me home or take me to this address, and the taxi driver does it and even converses with you.
Thanks, Raoul, for being here with us on Robots again.
Thank you for having me on the show.
The accessibility of the Emotive Epoch in terms of price and ease of use has meant that it was able to build a quite impressive portfolio of demos and applications from researchers and hobbyists alike. Our second guest, Jeffrey McKellar, is the research manager and chief technical officer of Emotive Systems, the neuroengineering company that developed the Epoch. He gives us some insight into the hardware of their headset, the type of tasks that the system can be made to learn, and the potential applications for such a device.
Hello, Jeff, and welcome to Robots.
Thank you, Adrian.
Could you tell us a bit about yourself and your work at Emotive Systems?
Yes, I'm the research manager and chief technical officer at Emotive Limited. I have a PhD in physics, and I have quite a lot of experience in developing high technology medical and consumer products over many years.
What is the emotive epoch?
Okay, the emotive epoch, it's a technology platform that's based on the electroencephalogram, or EEG. This is a machine which detects small electrical signals on the surface of the scalp. And when groups of neurons fire in the brain, you get very small but detectable voltage traces on the surface of the skin. And our headset picks up these signals from 14 different locations around the cortex. So we detect around the frontal cortex, and the temporal cortex, and all the way around to the visual cortex at the back of the head. The signals from these sensors are sent wirelessly to a PC, and we have a dedicated software system that extracts information from the data. So we can detect 12 different facial expressions. We detect 4 different emotions in real time, and we also detect several direct mental commands, very much like casting magic spells. There's also a gyroscope built into the headset, so we detect 2 axes of rotation of the head. And so it's quite a complex platform, and it's designed to be effectively an interface with a computer directly between the brain and the behavior of the user, straight into the computer.
Typical EEG systems require a preparation step for the scalp, applying conductive gel or light abrasion of the skin. How is your system able to achieve a good electrical contact without such a preparation?
Well, our system is quite similar to stick-on EEG sensors that use an electrolyte to contact the skin. In our system, we use salt water as the electrolyte, and we provide a saturated felt pad to make sure there's a continuous electrical track between the scalp and the electronics. Fluids mesh very well with the uneven surface, and they soak their way around the hair and other obstacles that could cause connection problems. Of course, water dries out, and we use a large storage volume inside the sensor body to store plenty of salt water there, and that keeps the sensors usable for several hours. We're working on another system which has much longer usability, which also uses a fluid, but one which doesn't evaporate, and that will be able to be worn continuously or survive several months without drying out.
In order to use the EPOC, there is a training step. How difficult is that for the user?
There's a training step for what we call the cognitive suite, which is the mental command systems. And it can be trained to recognize up to 4 concurrent actions within a couple of minutes. It's not a particularly difficult task to teach the machine what your visualizations should be. It's definitely a skill to learn how to use it well. It's a bit like playing a musical instrument or riding a bicycle. We made it very simple for users to train 1 or 2 actions and get reasonable control in a couple of minutes, but most people need to put in a little bit of practice to get it to work very well with up to 4 actions. Some people are good immediately, others can take quite a few days to get the idea. And what we find is that actually children seem to be much, much more competent and immediately natural at using the EPOC. And to be able to use it, it's a combination of confidence, the ability to relax rather than forcing a command, and being able to generate distinct mental patterns that you can recreate later, which means that you also have to be able to remember exactly what you did. So that's partly where the practice element comes in. Most of the effort in training is inside the user's head rather than in the machine, and most people have a pretty good handle on it after a day or two.
Is there a significant command to reaction delay in the system?
There is a slight delay, which comes from the way the software and the system work. So in real time, we're monitoring what's going on in the brain, but we look at the previous 1 second's worth of data to see if there's a mental action commencing, and we update that detection 4 times a second. So a skilled user can usually get an action going in a quarter to a half a second, but most of the delay actually comes about over and above the actual time that the machine takes to react. Most of the delay comes about because of the time it takes for the user to get into the right frame of mind and remember what it did and then repeat the mental pattern. So With novices, it can take maybe up to a few seconds to do this, sometimes longer, and experts tend to be quite a bit quicker. Still not completely instantaneous, like moving your arm, but it can be about a half-second delay when you get quite good at it.
Is it tiring on the user? Does he or she need to constantly focus on a certain command to maintain its effect? For example, going forward, or is there a command latching mechanism?
Well, we provide a system which detects what mental action is happening at the moment, and it's up to the user's application to decide how to use that. So you can use it in a latching mode so that you can latch a specific action like forward and use a different command to unlatch it, or it's possible to set it up so that the action is sustained while the user's generating the action. So essentially, when you generate a mental command, there's just an output available on our programming interface, which can be used to trigger an action and sustain it while the action's there, or else you can use it just as a latching switch.
Okay.
So it can get tiring after a few hours if you need to concentrate all the time, so in this non-latching mode. But we find that experts become more relaxed, and one problem that novices have is that they try to force the actions and they actually scrunch up the muscles in their head, and that actually is very tiring. But when you actually get used to using the system just with brain commands, it's much more simple. You don't have to concentrate too hard to make it happen. You kind of already know how to do it. It's a little bit like automatically playing a musical instrument. If you're learning a new piece on the piano, for example, you struggle over it for hours and hours teaching what they call teaching your muscles to play it. When you get used to it, you just play it. And if you try and let your brain intervene, it actually slows you down and can mess up the performance.
You've mentioned that facial expressions can also be used as inputs. Does this mean that the EPOC is also an EMG device?
That's correct, yes. In fact, any EEG system, even medical systems, will pick up significant muscle signals. The main reason is that the muscles generate quite a lot of electrical activity, and they're also located outside the skull. So they're actually much closer to the sensors. And in a general, in a medical context, muscle signals are regarded as pollution or as what they call artifacts. And they actually go to great lengths to either remove them or only use data when the artifacts are not happening. And we took a different approach. We actually use the muscle signals and interpret them to work out what your face is doing. So you can be raising your eyebrows or smiling or winking, and we can detect that. And the fact that we can detect the kind of muscle signal that's going on means that we can also detect the brain signals in behind them, because we already know how to compensate for them.
In all of the demos I've seen of the EPOC, commands appear to be given in a simple sequential manner. Nevertheless, the brain is essentially a parallel computer. Have you looked into teaching multiple command patterns and trying to combine them into more complex commands for multitasking? Do you know of other people who have?
Yes, we actually have some users who use our system in exactly that way. They run multiple instances of our detection systems, and they've managed to train the system so that they can think push on one system and lift with another system and get a diagonal vertical movement, so they can actually learn to combine actions. And it doesn't have to be things such as combined mechanical actions. You could think shoot fire and walk forwards at the same time. It's more difficult and obviously takes a little bit more skill, but a few people have managed to do it. We don't offer it as a standard at the moment because we need to work through how to make it robust enough for everybody to use, but it is quite possible.
Up until now, the Emotive EPOC has mainly been presented as a human-computer interface, with gaming being its natural target. What about the future? Your device holds a clear potential for other application domains like robotics and intelligent prosthetics. Are these directions that you are currently considering?
Absolutely. Robotics, definitely. There are many people using the EPOC to control robots already. And I guess if you realize that a robot can be controlled by a computer and then the computer can be controlled by the brain through the EPOC, then it's just a natural extension to move from activities in the virtual world to real actions in the real world. There are many people who have done demonstrations driving wheelchairs, running small robots around in educational applications as well. We found that there are absolutely a multitude of different possible uses for this technology. So they range from the medical world. So there are many research groups around the world using the EPOC because it's a good high-quality EEG system and it costs next to nothing compared to the $50,000 you'll pay for a medical system. And that's giving us lots of insights into medical conditions that can be looked at with the EPOC, such as epilepsy, depression and anxiety and that kind of thing, because we can detect emotional states as well. There are applications in neuromarketing. For example, you could look at a video and record the state of your emotions at different stages during the video, and you can use that to decide whether you like or dislike particular characters, whether you like or dislike particular products, whether advertising is being effective, that kind of thing. So that's a massive application area for us. I think probably intelligent prosthetics, maybe not so much. I think a prosthetic where you have to wear an appliance on the head full time, maybe not so good in the long term. For example, if your battery goes flat, you might not be able to operate your arm. But there's a lot of research into intelligent prosthetics at the moment involving EEG type implants. And in that case, I think that's much more likely to be a widespread use. On the other hand, there are things like human shells, so a robotic amplifier for human activity, so something that will carry massive loads. That has potential for an EPOC-type control system for sure. There are applications in transport safety. We can detect whether the user is fatigued or concentrating, and that's fairly obviously of interest if you're an air traffic controller or a long-distance truck driver, to know whether you're going to sleep or not. It's used in educational systems, so we can detect whether people are concentrating on the material or not. So, for example, if you're teaching children with ADHD through an automated program, you can adjust the program in real time to feed back into their state of mind. So if they're getting bored, you can change the material, give them something else to do. If they're engaged, you can feed the material to them faster. If they're getting frustrated, you can slow it down. So there are any number of different applications. It's a technology platform that can cover just a complete multitude of uses.
Thank you, Jeff, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you very much, Adrian. It's a pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks. Empower Your Mind with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.